we look at Alec Hansen. I had him on the AmpCon stage, chief marketing officer of Loan Depot. On stage, I'm like, you know, so Alec and I mean, you know, great to see you again. And I'm just introducing him. And he's like, again? Dude, this is our first time meeting. I'm like, what? And I'm having this like real moment. It's on video. I'm like, guys, this is the power of a leadership brand. I swear I have met Alec 10 times. And I think you bring up a really good point that most of us would never want to admit that because it feels offensive, but it is such a compliment that I didn't have any gap. I felt like I knew who he was.
Today is a special edition episode of the Housing News Podcast. Let's call it a breaking news episode. I have the pleasure of welcoming a new speaker, a new keynote to the Housing Wire annual lineup. This speaker is a renowned authority on leadership and influence. He's a best-selling author, keynote speaker, leadership advisor, and for 27 years, he's been applying behavioral neuroscience to solving some of the toughest challenges in leadership, sales, and change. Now, some of you may have an idea of who this guest is. I teased it a little bit on social media. In that description, really, there's nobody else like him. So if you haven't figured it out yet, our guest, one of our keynotes for Housing Wire Annual, is Rene Rodriguez. Rene is a phenomenal speaker, coach, and friend, and I can't wait to bring him to the stage at Housing Wire Annual, October 10th through 12th at the Hyatt Lost Pines Resort near Austin, Texas. In this episode today, I had the opportunity to speak with Rene to make sure we are in tune and ready for Housing Wire Annual, which is coming up in just a few weeks. We talk about some of the topics and advice that Rene is going to bring to the stage at the event. And there's even some coaching in there that Rene has for me, your fearless host of the Housing News Podcast. I really hope you enjoy this conversation with Rene Rodriguez and immediately go to housingwireannual.com and register for the event. We can't wait to welcome you to our home state of Texas and bring amazing speakers and leaders like Rene to the stage and to the networking community so you can meet and learn and engage. Sign up for Housing Wire Annual and enjoy this episode. Rene, I had a whole agenda for today, but we're starting off backstage in our virtual green room here, and you tell me I'm doing it all wrong. There's a better way to turn news into
leads. I did not say that. You're being nice. Okay. I did not say it that way.
Let's kick off. So we published an article this week, Home Prices Back Near All-Time Highs. And the subhead here is the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index. That is a long index name. Showed price increases in June. So we had this point last summer, summer 2022, home prices were reaching all-time highs. We had like some declines of home prices from the index perspective throughout the year as rates shot up. But now here we are, August 2023, home prices back near all-time highs. How do I message this to consumers if I'm a loan originator or realtor? What do they need to know?
So first, my disclaimer is I'm not an expert. I'm not licensed. I'm not a real estate agent. I've just been in your industry for 21 years. And I'm surrounded by people that are smart like you. I'm surrounded by, you know, the Steve Harneys and the Bill Harneys and all the Dave Savages, all the really, really, really smart people. And my role of this is saying, okay, I look at this, I step away and I look at what's the emotional impact, the psychological impact of a headline on consumer buying behavior. That's where I am an expert in. And I go, okay, so you said that interest rates are at an all-time high. Clearly, we can predict that that raises people's stress level and it slows down.
Not just interest rates at all-time highs. We also have home prices back at all-time highs. So like both of the levers.
Yeah. So both of them all-time high. Right. Okay. So then now all of a sudden now that scares everything, like everybody out of acting. Now, let me ask you this question. So I got to ask a few questions because I'm not the expert. What happened to home prices when we were at the lows 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Home price appreciation shot through the roof and demand was crazy. Homes were selling for over ask and multiple offer scenarios.
So here we had a scenario. This is your job, by the way, folks. I'm just helping you re-see this. And you have to turn this. And I know if you're listening to this, you know this, but are you communicating it in a consumer-friendly way? So you're saying that I could get a really super low interest rate on an overpriced home.
I think that was the gist. I think people were feeling that way too in parts of 2021.
And that's the scary part, right? So, and this is messaging. You say, okay, would you rather get a low interest rate on an overpriced home, right? And by the way, the interest rate can change. Or do you want to get into a home before it appreciates? And as it appreciates. So now this is a question I have for you. You said it's the home prices are at an all-time high. So this is where I got to ask, do you think they're going to go up?
I believe that demographics and demand will continue pushing home prices higher. And from some data and survey work we've seen from our friends at KCM, it feels like the average housing professional in America feels the same way.
I look at the optimist and I got the research right in front of me. So we're on the same page. And by the way, wouldn't every year be also an all-time high on home values?
Historically, a very high percentage of years have proven to be all-time highs.
Yeah. So that's just a really good headline, right? It gets me to read it. But if I look at that, if I'm, this is where you have to help, not talking about you, Clayton, but this is, and by the way, this is why I love you, because you're looking even at your own process, and I can speak freely. The loan officer, loan originator, and the real estate agent have to decipher headlines for people. They say, well, but home prices are all-time high. I said, well, look over the last 40 years, almost, not all, almost every year was an all-time high. The consistent thing is that's why home values are so good. Now, it makes for a great headline, but guess what? Next year, they're going to be higher. And so wouldn't next year be an all-time high? And then the next year after that, an all-time high. The next year after that. So what you're really thinking about is, are you worried about a bubble? Well, everything in the research says that we're not even anywhere near something like that. But the news media loves it. It loves it. It gets eyeballs. Now, let's back up for a minute. So here's what people need to really do is you've got to learn to separate two parts of the transaction that your consumers have put together as one. One being a good time to buy and to get into real estate. The second one is a good time to finance real estate. And so those are two separate pieces driven by two separate, very different data and different levers. Would you agree with that?
100%. And a good time to finance in any type of market, whether you're buying businesses or real estate or any other asset, they rarely align.
Rarely. Exactly. And that point right there is huge. So now imagine the consumer is going, hold on a second. Interest rates are high. Home values are high. I better just wait. So that is called a timing and an urgency issue. The consumer might like you. They see the value of it, but they think that now is not the right time to buy. And you have to be able to overcome that specific objection. And so for me, if I saw an article like that, and this is what I hope you guys get out of this. Somebody says, hey, I got great news. Interest rates and home prices are at an all-time high. And this is amazing news for us. And now that creates a frame for people to go, one, it kind of disrupts a little bit. Like, what do you mean? How is that amazing? And then we go back. So we'll take a look at last year or the year before. We had low interest rates, but you had 20 offers on a home. And some people would say that might have been an inflated value on a home. So yeah, you got a low interest rate on a home that was overpriced for the time. Now, what happens? Interest rates go higher. Demand has slowed. So that the home that you want is probably available if it's for sale. And if you put an offer on it, you'll probably get it at a fair market value. If we already know that next year it's going to be more and more and more. So you're buying real estate at a great time. But then you're going to say, okay, hold on, interest rates. Here's the thing. You have to separate that out. Being worried about today's interest rate, it's like saying, well, I want to buy Tesla and Apple, but I didn't get it when it was a dollar. So I'm going to wait till it comes back to a dollar. Ain't happening. It's not happening. And it would just be stupid. Nothing indicates that. It's just not going to happen. It's not the trajectory of the price and what's happening. History never shows it happen. And so there are people making millions, if not billions, buying those stocks, and they didn't buy them at a dollar. They're buying them now because they're looking at the difference between what it is and where it's going. And you have to look at it the same way. But here's the best news. If I'm a loan officer, I'm saying, you have an entire industry, me, that gets paid to tell you the moment the interest rates come down and we can refinance it. Get in at a great price of the home, take the interest rate at where it's at, and when it comes down, we get you there. Now, here's one of two things are going to happen. You get in, which I think would be the best case scenario. Best case scenario is, or actually worst case scenario, you get in and the interest rates go up, right? Interest rates go up. But worst case scenario is you're going to say, thank you, Renee, for getting me in when it was low, because it's a lot lower in comparison. Best case scenario would be we get in, you lock in your rate, and interest rates go down. Now, that's counterintuitive because you'd say, well, I should have waited. No. We wait. When interest rates come down far enough, we refinance you, and you got the home at the right price and at the lowest rate. You've won on both fronts. So this is the conversation that needs to happen. And it's not a script, it's a conversation. But there's scripting elements of things that I said there that should be done because you're understanding the psychology of the buying behavior. You're separating out two different pieces, which makes it easier to deal with, meaning buying versus financing. And you're showing the data and you're reframing the potential negative interpretation and emotional interpretation of what a headline could cause.
This is a perfect frame to go into the conversation that we want to have today about you, about Amplify, about the two big events that you and I are bringing to the market in October. But I want to start with Amplify. And much like people might look at this market right now and say it's not the right time to buy a house because prices are high, you made a contrarian decision in 2020 and pivoted your entire entrepreneurial career and went in a different direction with Amplify. Tell us about that pivot point for you in the business that you've built at an incredible pace in the last 3 years that was building on years of experience and expertise, but found its launch point at a very difficult time in the global economy.
Thank you, first and foremost. These are fundamental beliefs that I've had for a long time. One, it's not my first big crisis. The birth of my work came out of 9/11. I took over a business that was doing 55 workshops a month and all over the world. We had 37 consultants teaching this stuff. We were on top. I would send out proposals. They'd come back and sign at $500,000 and we get $1 million. It was just a daily thing. We were doing great. And we lost the entire business a week after 9/11. That forced me to rethink everything and look at how I behave within crisis. And one of the core beliefs that I'd have was that creativity and innovation come from constraint. My mother told me a lesson a long time ago when I was a kid. I was bored. And I told her I was bored. And she said, okay, well, why don't you go get creative, grab your crayons and draw for a little bit, paint a picture, and give me 10 minutes, I'll be over there. So I went and got the 64 pack of crayons. Remember those? It was like you'd open it up and it's like all those colors were there and the sharpener in the back.
Multiple levels.
Like it was stadium seating.
Yeah.
And it was just the coolest thing ever. I don't think kids will ever understand just opening up and seeing colors and that just being the coolest thing. And she said, nope, you can't use the whole box. You can only choose two colors. And I'm like, you said be creative. She said, yeah. I said, creativity. She said, Renee, understand this. Creativity isn't about using every color in the spectrum. Creativity is about having only two colors and working wonders with those colors. Now, at the time, I was just frustrated. But when I got older, that little voice said, okay, we're entering a time of constraint. I can't travel. There's no in-person events. And then the first thing that went through my mind was everyone's scared. Okay, so this is even. We're all scared. So if we're all scared, it's the person that deals with the fear the best is going to win. And this doesn't scare me. Like it doesn't scare me. I've been through so much shit in my life. Excuse my language. This is just information to me. It's just information. And if I know that everybody else is going to stop, I always imagine myself, I'm in a race and everybody's doing great. It's hard to win a race where everyone's doing well. But if I'm in a race and people stop because they're distracted by something, I'm going to keep running as fast as I can and go, hey, pay attention to whatever it is you want to. My eye's on the ball. And we just got really focused on studios and cameras and lighting and location and microphones and creating an experience the way you do in a movie. I mean, you see like the fake background, even just little advancements like this. And let's go to New York. Okay, now I got New York behind me, right? Oh, I don't like that. Let's put some flames behind me. You know, just things that could do that. Or, you know, let's do something and make some money together, right? All these things are ways that we can pick and keep this little screen up to life. So that became something that was really, really cool. And I remember you, me, and even Steve Harney would collaborate on a lot of different things. And the whole goal of what we were doing was saying, we need to be lighthouses right now. Everyone else is scared. They're stuck in a storm and they don't know where to go. And remember Steve and I would literally talk every day almost to be like, what are you posting today? What's going on? And he would post something, I'd share it. I'd post something, he'd share it. And it was just like this push. And I watched so many leaders just back away and it was like, man, this is the time we need to come forward and triple down on everything we've got. Cause I mean, if you talk about being perseverant and then the little difficulty comes into play and you hide in your hot tub, no, this is the time that we actually, yeah.
Hide in your hot tub. That's a good visual.
I mean, I literally got texts from people and you know, CEOs in their hot tubs and leaders and broker owners in their hot tubs going, hey, why are you working? You're supposed to be locked up. And it's like, dude, not all of us can just stop working. And whether or not I had money was irrelevant. It was the fact that I know that most of the world needed to keep moving somehow. And I look at that and saying, okay, if no one, what are those separator moments, right? And it's hard because you have to be able to be very present and then disassociate from the moment and emotion and look about what's going on and say, ah, is this one of those moments we read about that people were really cool and they did different things? Well, maybe I'm in one right now. So what do I want to say I did during that moment? Joe Rogan has a really cool thing. He said, if you were the actor and the main actor in your own movie, main character, what would you, and it was a hero movie that did some crazy good stuff. What would you say this actor did? And I'm like, oh man, that's really cool. Well, they pushed harder and they persevered. They were the leader. And I'm like, okay, then let's just be that. Okay. Hold on. So then now really what we're saying is the now is the current, today is the past of my future. So I could write my past as I want it right here and now if I'm really present. Well, in a year, I want to say that I was a leader. I was a lighthouse. I did these things. And look at where we are now. Honestly, all that mentality, that's the mindset you have during the most difficult times. And then at the end, it's over. And there's people are surprised that you're way ahead. It's not an accident.
And you activated that mindset, not just in building out an awesome AV studio at home, but very short after getting on the road and hosting. How many Amplifies have you hosted at this point, Renee?
Well, we do about 34 a year right now.
34 a year. So, I mean, you're hitting the road more than every other week.
Oh, which is, that's just which Amplify. Is incredible. I think last year I spoke 239 days.
And here we are on a Saturday morning recording because I couldn't find a weekday where you weren't on the road talking on stage. So I don't hate that. I envy that. I like it.
This is actually really nice because people say, like, what are the separator moments? I go, stupid holidays are separator moments. You know, like people are going to use the whole weekend. I'm like, man, no one's going to call. I get to like focus on creating AmpCon. I get to create some videos. I get to hang with the family and I get to write some stuff. I mean, it's just like, it's really nice. Separated moments. I get to hang with
Cleet. 239 speaking days, 34 AmpCons.
Amplifies.
Yeah. Sorry. Amplifies. Wrote a book, Amplify Your Influence. Pretty incredible. All of these things came from harnessing your mindset. So let's talk about how housing professionals, screw the word housing professionals, CEOs of mortgage banks and CEOs of mortgage real estate brokerages need to harness their mindset in the crisis that we're in today. 2023 has been another brutal market. Yeah, it's kind of, look back on 2020, it turns out it was a false flag. It was actually a pretty good market. But let's talk about 2023. It's been brutal. Mindset has been a front and center term. It's something that I hear everybody in the industry talk about. Not everybody executes on carrying the right mindset quite as well as others. So talk about that. How do you harness a mindset in a market like this? If you're trying to lead a team of mortgage originators, executives, real estate agents, and brokers, give us a glimpse.
So I'm going to frame that up a little bit that a lot of my colleagues, like we sit back and we watch a lot of speakers and some of the best in the world speak, and man, it's emotionally an amazing experience. It's beautiful to watch how they talk. And then what we have a challenge where we sat down after was like, what notes did you take that you can implement? And usually pretty consistently, it's not much. And not saying that they're not smart people. These are brilliant business people and people I can learn a ton from, like so much from, and are much far more successful financially than I am. But they're in the keynote, there isn't much tangible, actionable things that are going on, which to me goes against my own personal ethos, right? Not a judgment to others. It's my own personal takeaways. And so what my coaches and mentors challenge me to say is how do you do both? And so that really comes down to is understanding the why and then the internal decisions that need to be happening. It's a lot of external stuff. Like, for example, like, you know, all right, the three rules to life. First one, work on yourself every day. And you're like, man, work on myself every day. And in the context of this really, really big story, and I'm like, man, this is amazing. They overcame this. I'm going to work on myself every day. And then at the end, when I get home and that emotion is gone, and I'm like, I what am I going to do? I work on myself. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean?
How sit-ups, right?
Okay, so let me do sit-ups. Well, my business didn't change. Well, what is my what is work on myself? Hold on. And then the phone rings. Hey, what's going on? No. Oh, shoot. Okay, I got it. And that gaunt moment's gone. So when you ask that question, especially if you're a CEO, you don't have time for a platitude. You need to go, what's the thing? What can I do? And then what's the internal struggle that I'm going to really battle? And this, by the way, is a lot of the stuff that we tackle in our mastermind group, which is the internal alarm system for values, integration, and alignment for leaders. What's that internal alarm that mean? That thing when no one's watching, no one's around, there's no Instagram, there's no external motivator, there's no workout partner, there's no accountability person saying, what are you doing right there? It's just you and yourself in the mirror. What's that internal alarm? And so for me, when you say as a CEO, as a leader, it's managing what comes out of my mouth, period. What am I saying? Because what comes out of my mouth, if you're a leader, you are the most watched and the most listened to in your entire organization. Harvard did a crazy study, and we don't need a study to know that, by the way, but it has been studied. The literature supports what I'm saying. You're the most watched, you're the most listened to, which means you set the narrative by what you say. And how you say it, meaning we're really excited about what's happening in the housing market right now. And that, if you speak that way, not judging you, I'm just telling you truth and facts that people will not emotionally connect with you. Now, Clayton, I couldn't be more excited about what's happening. Yeah, it's hard, but so what? The best things in my life have come on the back end of something really difficult. So this is going to be the best thing that ever happened to us. And it's going to take people, you know, see that kind of enthusiasm. And that can only happen when people actually believe it. And so it's what's coming out of my mouth in that sense. And I ask so many leaders to say, hey, so how's the housing market? It's like, oh, we're just trying to keep our heads above water right now. And man, it's just been hard. I mean, I just think it's just been really hard. And if I'm listening to that, I'm like, okay, so it is hard. Yeah, it has been really hard. And I stopped making phone calls. These phone calls are hard. And it's in that moment of decision, do I keep pushing or do I just enable mediocrity? And the leader's job is to push me over that hump, to make 2 or 3, 5, 10 more calls, to get and communicate something, to listen to a podcast like what we're doing right now, and to say, you know what, hold on a second, I need to turn news into deals. Well, what does that mean? What's the opportunity within that? What is all there? And so take the time to research and learn. I'm not even in the industry and I could go and sell real estate right now because I understand how to communicate that stuff. And so that's the skill. This is a communication skill. This is the tool. It comes out.
So Renee, can I take some coaching here? So like when I think about myself as a leader, in tough times or great times, I focus on a few areas. So I strongly believe in leading by example. So like I'll come in on a Saturday morning and do the content. No, I don't expect my whole team to be doing this, but I want to show the dedication. Two, I focus heavily on empowering my team to make decisions and be creative and lead their respective part of the organization or product. So I lead by example and then empower. Now, communication, I don't repeat. I think that maybe that's a leadership weak or a communication weakness. So, I feel like I've communicated a message once. I went and go act on that and lead by example and empower the team to go. If you're looking at me as a leader, how do I strengthen my leadership skill set with the team I'm leading and ultimately believe I hold a leadership position in the industry, and I need to think about that as well.
So here's my first response on how I approach any sort of consultative moment, right? Like this is, I don't give advice unless I understand your goals. So like for me, there's any advice I would give would be an assumption. And this would be I think it's a good lesson for anybody to say, hold on, ask questions first and to understand like, what are Clayton's goals? But within the context of also understand the person's strengths. And so I'm going to start there and then I'm going to ask you a question. One, Clayton, I think what makes you different is that you are a true business professional in an industry that doesn't have much business sense and guidance. It's a very transactional industry. How does this help me get another deal is usually the forefront question. People don't think about what's the career path here? How do we get people more engaged? How do we build trust and teamwork? those are long-term cultural questions that usually don't make it into mortgage and real estate conversation, unfortunately, which is also partially why we have turnover, partially why we slit our throats in hiring people with commissions as a value proposition instead of a career path or culture or an environment. And we say things like technology, but everybody has the tech, everybody has the pricing, everybody has that stuff. So one is you take a true business approach to this. And so I think within that, you also are known to have high levels of integrity. You literally talk to all sides of all parties and all people from all sides of an argument. And you're known to speak the truth. So you're an advocate of the consumer. You're an advocate of truth. And so those are all things that I think people really admire about you. It's what I admire about you too. And so for that, within that context, what would you say is missing for you in that sense, right? And just the fact that you're even asking this question publicly and you and I haven't discussed this is also a sign of what I think is a good leader, somebody that's also leading by saying, hey, coaching happens at all levels.
So I think what triggers the desire to improve my own communication skills is like seeing some of identifying some of the weaknesses in my own business. So like we built through acquisition, I can tell that it's moderately or very hard for some of our team members and myself at times included to tell our story, exactly what we do, who we are, how we serve. We're actually working with a partner right now on getting our brand story tight and our brand, both like the headline branding, but also the brand story and the narrative and the copy, like extremely, extremely tight. And so I look at some of like the feedback loops and like survey data from team and audience. And I see like, okay, like we got some holes there. And for me, it's very obvious. I know what we're building. I know why we're building it. I know which direction we're going. But if other people are perceiving a narrative gap, then that kind of rolls back to me on a communication side. So that's what's signaling that's why I'm asking the question.
Well, I think there's two approaches. One is there's two things that come to mind. If you're setting up Housing Wire, and you don't have to answer this, to maybe be in a potential acquisition of some port, then my advice right now might not help. Meaning, how do you grow your personal brand? Because I think if in personal brand, I think people need to understand has taken on a new meaning and a much bigger meaning than sales and marketing. It is a communications tool. The personal brand is a leadership brand. It's a leadership tool now because go back 50 years ago. 50 years ago, most people died very close to where they worked, and they died very close to where they lived. I mean, they didn't leave a certain geographic area. So if I work somewhere,
I'm close to where they were born.
Yeah. And so they didn't leave. And so if I worked for somebody, I saw my boss, I saw my colleagues, I saw the people that really were the stakeholders of my work and my outcomes daily, usually, especially during the week. And then on the weekends, I'd probably see them at the baseball games or the grocery store, at the salon or the barbershop. And I'd see them everywhere. And so there wasn't much of a gap between us. And so I knew the idiosyncrasies. I knew the facial expressions. I knew the gaps in communication and all of those sort of underlying pieces in the human relationship start painting a picture, or what we would call the narrative. And so if somebody's upset, I know it. Now, advanced technologies, advanced communications, advanced transportation. And people start moving further and further away from those centralized tight communities, suburbs, travel. And then I go, you know what? No, I know what my sales team is doing. I just look at my phone. I say, they made 24 phone calls today. We got 2 deals in the pipeline. I know what's happening. But they might know like activity-based what's happening, but they don't know the person. And so there's this monster gap between them in saying, okay, how do I then fill that, right? Because if I don't fill it, and this is what I wrote about in Chief Executive, which was I think the underlying cause of the Great Resignation was that leaders didn't fill the narrative gap. And so then the people, recruiters would come around, and then add to that a shift in values after the pandemic, more meaning and more connection at work, which we accelerated by the pandemic. Now I'm pulled away from my connections. I'm pulled away from meaning. I'm stuck in my house and I'm going, there's got to be more to life. And my leader's not around to help me understand that. My boss, I see him on a screen. I can barely see them. I can barely hear them. And all of this gap is sort of starting to increase. And then a recruiter calls and goes, hey, by the way, we really believe in you. Yeah, tell me, what's going on? I said, well, you know, we believe in culture. We believe in all the stuff. And that gap is filled by a recruiter, and 76% of people want to leave. And so what the ultimate solution, I think, right now, is that every leader should be focusing on their leadership brand, so that when two great examples are Brian Covey and Alec Hansen. I think they're just excellent examples. First time I met both of them, I thought it was the
both of which will be on stage at Housing Wire Annual. So we'll come back to that.
Oh, phenomenal. And both of which, the first time I met them in person, I thought it was the third or fourth time. And let's play that out. It's funny, but it's powerful. Brian Covey came to our Amplify event, and he and I went to dinner that night. And I'm like, man, it's good to see you, again. And I'm like, and he's like, Renee, this is our first time meeting. And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, maybe it's not. Hold on. And we sat there for half an hour at dinner trying to figure out where we had met before. And that was the first time we had met.
It's such a huge compliment, though. Like, you made a false assumption in your head. Some people could be offended by that. Like, hey, what's this guy talking about? But no, it's a huge compliment, because you built a personal connection, probably through Instagram. Like, because he gives a pretty good visible picture into his life, his business, his motivation, his workouts. I think there's even been a TikTok dance or two with the family. The man, like, lets you in.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And then we look at Alec Hansen. I had him on the AmpCon stage. This is the chief marketing officer of Loan Depot. And on stage, I'm like, so Alec and I, it's great to see you again. And I'm just introducing him. And he's like, again, dude, this is our first time meeting. I'm like, on stage, after I just got done talking about this, I'm like, what? And I'm having this like real moment. It's on me. I'm like, holy sh! Like, this, guys, this is the power of a leadership brand. I swear I have met Alec 10 times. And I think you bring up a really good point that most of us would never want to admit that because it feels offensive, but it is such a compliment that I didn't have any gap. I felt like I knew who he was. And there's a name for this, and I forget it, but if you follow somebody and you watch them and you listen to them, you start to embody a lot of what they do through just the narrative and what it creates. And like, if you love a character on TV, research shows you'll actually start to think and hold a value set. Like, almost like, what would Jesus do? Like, what would Axelrod do here right now? You know,
maybe I should watch less Billions, because this could get into tricky territory.
That's what I just said, Axelrod, right? What would Ax do in this one? But you start to embody sort of that thinking. And, he was doing something. He was talking about at the funeral, and he's like, and he kind of had this moment of vulnerability. He's like, typically I don't go to funerals because, quite frankly, I don't know how to process it. I just like to move through it. And then I'm like, God, that's a really good approach to move through difficulty and just to push through. Maybe I'd be a billionaire if I did that. Like, wait a minute, slow down all in a second. But I think that in your case, dude, you have such a strong ethos of leadership, of integrity, of knowledge, and you're also somebody that will go toe to toe with somebody in the search for truth. That's the leadership we need. And so if I were to tell you, brother, I would say, let's double down on your brand, not from a vanity perspective, but from just a communication and a movement of the collective narrative perspective.
I appreciate that, Renee. I wasn't looking for compliments, but I'll dig through your words and help that.
They're not a compliment. Truth. You know what they are? It's an obligation now, because here's the thing. Leadership's a privilege and leadership's an obligation. If people believe in you and what you're doing, then a good friend of mine, Dan Fleischman, who's just a brilliant human.
I met him at Forward. Neil Dinger's event out at Forward. Yeah.
Yeah. Forward. By the way, just shout out to Neil again. He has done such an incredible job of pulling so many good people into one place and allowing access to those people.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. And see, the Dan set me aside and he said, Renee, he goes, in today's world, because I was talking about, he said, Renee, he goes, you have all the pieces. You got this book, you got this, you got all 30 years, all this stuff. And he goes, the only thing you don't have is fame. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just really not interested in that. Like, I just want to kind of stay down. And he just looks at me and he goes, do you believe you do good work? I'm like, I do. He said, do you believe you change lives? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. The transformations are incredible. He goes, then you are being selfish if you're not famous right now. Oof. I'm like, okay, I need to reframe fame.
That's an obligation.
Yeah.
That's the obligation right there.
Frick. Like, I got, okay, it's not like, I was like, it's not an ego thing. Maybe it's just an eyeballs thing.
Renee, can I read a short passage from Amplify Your Influence?
Absolutely.
So you start the book with a narrative titled Control the Room, and you talk about an event you're speaking at in Dallas, Texas. Do you remember which event that was? It was a group of sales and marketing leaders in Dallas, Texas, about 600 people. Do you remember the event?
I do learn exactly where it was. It was actually the Mortgage Bankers Association event in Utah. I just changed it up just to protect.
Oh, okay. So it was actually out in Utah. So that meant 600 people. Actually, I'll back up a little bit. You were given the lunch slot. You were speaking during lunch. So that meant 600 people clanking plates, forks, knives, and dozens of amazing staff darting around doing their jobs, oblivious to a speaker trying to deliver a message. So that's the frame here. You talk about how it's a tough gig. You talk about
the
right approach and you going through your own head of how do I take control of this room? How do I ensure I have the attention of the audience? How do you meet your obligation to deliver knowledge as a speaker? And this will be the test. So Renee, this passage, and I'll read a little bit more in a second, is what inspired me to reach out to you to speak at Housing Wire Annual in the famed, the amazing lunch presentation. So Renee, you get to come back to Housing Wire Annual and take control of a room with clanking plates, forks, knives, and dozens of amazing staff walking around. But this will be the test though, Renee. The folks that listen to this podcast that also attend Housing Wire Annual, they will be the ones that actually get a few calories in their stomach, because this is the warning. So Renee, in his effort to take control of the room, asked the question. So what do we do? First, we want to ensure that we present our value in the best possible scenario. For me to do that, I have to ask two things. And this is Renee talking to the audience. First, let's thank our wonderful staff here today for their great work. If you still have a plate, please place it on the tray and take it outside so we can begin. You have 1 minute or so to do so. And so that's the warning. I am not anticipating that our guests at Housing Wire Annual will have a very long time to eat their food at the Hyatt Lost Pines Resort down in Austin. So eat fast, because Renee is going to own the stage. Renee, how did that 600 person event, the NBA event, take place? Like how did the talk go after you gave people 2 minutes to suck down their sauteed vegetables and steamed chicken or whatever the heck they were serving at the NBA event?
Well, the context to that one is, and first of all, I need to point something out. Who's the ultimate influencer? It's Clayton. You know what he did? He pulled the old, hey, I left my shoes upstairs. Renee, you're way faster. Can you go out and grab it? You know, you're faster than me. I'm like, yeah. And I run upstairs. Hey, I need a lunch slot. Renee, you're the best. You wrote about it in your book. Could you do it? I'm like, yeah, I could totally do it. So touche, man, and kudos on that one. So the backstory was that I got asked to speak at the event, and I had an Amplify in the same city, ironically. And there was no way I could do it. And I said, you know what, hold on a second, because I like to get creative. I said, is there a lunch spot open? And so I'd ask for it. And maybe I go on the tail end of lunch. And they said, we'll give you whatever spot you want. I said, well, maybe if I switch my event location, we'll switch it to your hotel. I'll come down. I just want my students to have free access. They can sit in and watch lunch and get a free lunch. And then they can watch something. And I'm thinking I could create the presentation at Amplify. They can watch it delivered over lunch. It'd be a really cool case study. And one of the participants was actually in his market. And he's like, oh, shoot, you're speaking? I can buy a speaker spot. I'll buy one and I'll speak as well. And I'll speak right before you. And he's like, yeah, I got a slot before you. I'm like, so you're speaking during lunch? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, I don't think you want to do that. He's like, no, I'm good. It'd be good. I got a great story to tell. I'm like, you're going to have 600 plates, you know, clanking, and nobody gives a crap about you being in there. And he goes, no, it'll be good. I'm like, well, you better be highly distracting, more distracting than the food and the conversations and the people's rest time and what we call their discretionary time. They didn't pay to be there. They pay to eat, you know? And so it's a really tough spot. Anyways, he goes out there, he gives us the best he can, the story of literally how he almost died over COVID. It's a powerful story, but nobody was listening in the beginning. It was just, and not saying nobody, but it was just really hard. There was a bunch of tables that were just very rude, talking as he's like talking about how he's almost dead and looking in the mirror. And people are just like, yeah, pass the salt. And it was just, and I'm going, oh, this poor guy. And So at the end, you know, it was supposed to be done eating, but they still had all the food out there. People were still clanking plates. And he sat down. He's like, I feel like I was thrown out of a moving truck. I'm like, I know, it's a tough gig, man. And I've done that before with about 1500 people eating. And yeah, it was tough. But so I said, let me show you what I mean by control the room. And that's where I stood up and I said, first and foremost, everybody, wow, what an amazing staff we've got here. Now, they had about a half hour to eat, maybe a little bit more. And so I said, what an amazing staff. And I said the same thing. If you're holding on a plate, please place it on the tray and we'll take it right outside the doors. And my whole team, my wife looks at me, she's like, what are you doing? And I just smiled. And here's the thing. Yes, it was awkward for about 2 minutes. But then after 2 minutes, I had a dead silent audience and they could hear everything. And that's what they were there for. And so you have to be willing to control the room. I'll give you another example. It's different. I got asked to do a realtor event in Minnesota. They didn't have, I told them, I said, you'll get a ballroom, the whole thing. He goes, hey, we got a great space. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, it's on a rooftop. I'm like, you're going to go on a rooftop for a keynote overlooking Lake Minnetonka, which is beautiful, and the sun bearing down for 3.5 hours. Yeah. I'm like, no, not going to happen. One, it's not that they don't want to listen. I'm like, why compete with sun, humidity, the lake, and alcohol?
And you got to put up some serious speakers to let people hear you in open air. Yes. Like, any, that is a challenging dynamic to make work well.
So we get there and he's like, we got it all handled. You know, he tells us, okay, we got it all handled. They close it all off. And I'm like, it's closed off. They go, yeah. I'm like, okay, I get there an hour early. The tops are open. The sun's beating down. There's no air conditioning. The lake is beautiful. The sun is just blaring. You can't see anything. And I'm looking around and I'm going, okay. I go, you paid $35,000 for this. I'm going to turn into a very different person for about 30 minutes. I'm going to be kind of an a-hole, but not because I'm an a-hole, but because we need to shift this room now so that you get your money's worth today. I go, one thing that's not negotiable is client value. And I don't want to end this with going, yeah, it was super hard and I wasted that money. And he goes, I'll do what you need. I go, okay. I go, where's the manager? Manager. I said, you guys are going to earn your keep today. Trust me, we'll have a tip for everybody at the end of this. I said, I need all your staff front and center now. And they all come. And I said, folks, we have a challenge. You have too beautiful of a place. It is so beautiful that people are going to want to look out there instead of wanting to look in here. And so we need to solve for that. Secondly, it's such a beautiful day, but I'm a big dude and I'm bald. I can't have the sun beating on my head as we do that. And this microphone system isn't there. And I've got 4 fans blowing on the microphone. So we're going to have to solve for this. And the first thing we got to solve for is sunlight. They go, well, we can close the vents. I say, great. Johnny, whatever his name was, you're on vent control. What are we doing about all these windows? Well, we could raise the things. I said, can you drop drapes? They go, well, we have some in the back. I said, drop them. I want it all closed off. I said, so now we got this beautiful bar in the middle of this. So they're going to be people, me in the front, a big bar, and then people in the back. And I'm going to be looking through wine glasses and cocktails and like alcohol to be able to see. So we need to open up this channel. We need to close this part off and we need to rearrange all this and bring all these chairs here, get rid of these tables and put just chairs. And we just start going through all of this stuff and everybody was going after it. And we stopped at the end. We look around, we're like, okay, now we can play. And I'll give you, so that's control. I'll give you one last piece. This was an event that I did a favor for a friend of mine who won't mention it, but they had sold VIP tickets and they said they're supposed to have 400, 500 people there. Well, about 87 showed up and there was seating for 400. Now that does not look good. And this is an organization that's very important. It's doing something very good. They're just not good at the marketing just yet. And they had a stage and then a VIP section that was roped off and then a general seating with 67 people in there and no one bought VIP. And we're 10 minutes before we start. And I looked around and he's like, sorry, man, I did the best I could. And I'm like, okay. I go, pull your team together. Lesson one, we're recreating the stage. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, walk with me. I said, take a picture here. The moment you take a picture and you got scattered 67 people, all you see are empty seats, no one in here in the stage. And I'm already 35 feet away from them. No connection. I might as well be speaking to a wall. And I said, and the assets that will live after this will not help you sell your next event. So you got to still think from the perspective of what are your assets you're creating, which means we need to shut down all the outer seating up here. It's closed down. And you need to get all your staff to shut that down and move people in. Secondly, remove these five tables of VIP, open it up, remove these ropes. This is the new stage on the floor in front of people. And he's like, done, done, done. Everybody went out. We created it, pulled everybody in. Now we had 60 people just jammed. I went to all three videographers. I said, you have a simple job today. You assess every photo to eliminate empty seats. And so you're going to intimate photos, zoomed in, blurred, depth of field, do everything that you can around this stuff. We pull all this together in 10 minutes. And afterwards it was like, okay, now I knew the content, but you know what happened was it made for a great experience because people that were there were intimately connected with me. I could see their facial expressions. I could walk the audience. And to me, I love smaller groups because we can go deep with them. But it really is that control the environment before you control people, because people are going to act within their environment.
I'm tying this back to some of our conversation around leadership and communication. You followed when I was asking about me and my leadership style of communication, you started asking about my objectives and goals. And what I'm seeing through you right now and the guidance that you're giving this event team at the event to make sure the room looks full and the assets are incredible. You knew your objective. You knew the objective of the event organizer, and you shared that with the people who could make it happen. And without that guidance, without that leadership, without that transparent objective, those people that had the physical power to rearrange the room and take the right photos and do the right design wouldn't have known which direction to charge in.
True.
And that communication, that clear communication of the objective is what made that scenario successful.
That's true. I appreciate it. It's funny. Sometimes I forget that I do that. And I'm starting to think, have I done that for AmpCon? I'm going, I better write this vision down. I usually write a vision down, but this, I think I got to get more detailed.
You can give your team this, this interview and let them, digest how Renee's thinking. I'm going to do the same thing. So Renee, you're taking the stage at Housing Wire Annual, October 10th through 12th, down at the Hyatt Lost Pines near Austin. This is Housing Wire's event built for the leaders of the housing industry. And we're bringing together CEOs and other C-suite executives from across the industry, from mortgage origination, like close to 50% of the attendees right now, registered attendees, are mortgage banking C-suite. We have leaders from the servicing side, like Baron Silverstein, the president, NewRez, leaders from real estate brokerage, like Amory Wooden, who's a CMO at Anywhere Brands, Sandra Thompson from the FHFA, and Logan Modishami, Housing Wire's esteemed lead analyst who graces your podcast feeds and how the pages of Housing Wire and CNBC every single week. So I couldn't be more pumped with the leaders we're bringing to the stage, but the folks that are going to be in attendance, building networks, communicating, doing commerce, all the things that you want to achieve at an event are going to be there down at the Hyatt Lost Pines. And I'm thrilled to have you, Renee, taking a leadership role and guiding us through lunch and hopefully a quick meal and a lot of learning after.
Well, I'm excited. I think that, you know, are you doing the intro?
Yes. Yes, sir. I'll be there for you.
Okay, perfect. So I think let's wake people up in the intro. And because I think the frame is going to be really simple, is that the distractions in that room are no different than the distractions in the marketplace. And we got to be able to sift through and communicate through distraction.
So
very few of us have the privilege of not having distractions.
And Housing Wire Annual will be a warm-up of sorts for you, at least. We have two big events in October, and you and I are working together to make sure these two events, Housing Wire Annual October 10th, starts on October 10th, and AmpCon, your event that you're hosting actually here in our home market of Dallas, Texas, on October 26th, are very synergistic. And we're bringing together leaders and focusing on regulation and origination strategies and servicing and tech. You're bringing together leaders from across the industry with a different objective. So tell us what you're trying to achieve with AmpCon and what attendees can expect.
Well, one we're super excited about. being in Dallas, I think it's such a great place to host events. And the our AmpCon is really was born out of an extension of Amplify. And, you know, the first one, we had 700 people standing room only. We didn't have any celebrity speakers. It was just an idea. It was an idea and I would say a philosophy and an approach, what Amplify means, which is learning how to tell your story and being better leaders. And just the industry's best of the best showed up. And I mean, we literally had people that were vendors of another event saying we've never seen more players, leaders in one room in the audience than at any event. And they're literally saying, is there any way we can move our stuff in here? And we didn't sell any sponsorships. And so that's great learning on our part. Second year, same thing. And we didn't really announce any celebrity speakers, no high paid anything speakers. Even though we had some cool people like Bradley and Horian Gracie, and this was Neil Dingress, one of his first big mortgage stages. And I tell people, I said, you know, it was before he wore a hat, you know, he had his sort of, the haircut that he always had before.
The OG Neil.
Yeah. The OG Neil. And so then this year we've got, I'm so excited about these speakers. We've got Jefferson Fisher, who, if you don't know, you probably know, cause you see his content. To give you an idea, Ed Milet has about 2,000 posts, just under 2,000 posts, and he's about 2.6 million followers. It's huge. Jefferson Fisher started not that long ago, has 240 posts. And I mean, it's less than a year, 240 days ago, and has 2.5 million and approaching 2.6, blazing speed. And he sits in his car and he gives you a communication and argument tip every day. He's a trial attorney, one of the most humble dudes. He's also Dallas local, he's Texas native, lives in Texas. He'll be speaking there. We've got Clinton Sparks, who is Grammy nominated, 80 million records sold, 80 million records sold, works with Jay-Z, Lady Gaga, Eminem, 50 Cent, Ludacris, you name the artist, he's a part of it. And he's an entrepreneur at heart first. And so we're going to be doing one of the coolest things. Go ahead. If you have a question, I tell you,
I was looking him up, and like his story, it's like a scrappy story. Yeah. So he was bootlegging remixes and somehow got some of those on like some Boston area radio shows, which led to opportunity and led to opportunity. And the next thing you know, Lady Gaga. Yeah. I mean, obviously not an overnight success, but like it takes scrappy repetition. I've never heard Clinton speak. I'm excited to, but it seems like it's going to be a story that like really energizes you as an entrepreneur or salesperson or whatever you choose to dedicate your time.
And the fun part is that we're going to take apart a beat that he gave a very famous artist. He said, I have this, and we'll all know who it is. I don't want to give it away. A beat. And then he shows the artist, and he was so excited. It was just made for him. And he's like, what else you got? Wasn't interested at all. And this is like the story of how we present things without context and frame. He presented a beat with no frame and it didn't go anywhere. And so he got upset. This is what makes him relentless. He goes out and he calls up so-and-so and big artist, gets an acapella of this, gets an acapella of that, puts the beats together, puts the production together, gets it back to him. And he goes, and here's the video with me in it. And it went to, you know, did great. So he put the whole picture together to communicate the idea and the vision, which is what we as leaders need to do. So it's a great leadership lesson, but it's going to come around musically and in a really exciting fashion. So we've got that. We've got Neil Ford, one of the top 10 most decorated creative directors in the entire world, Sony and Toyota and Michelin. Like it's just such a cool human. These are all highly approachable people. These aren't people that are going to be holier than thou. They're going to be there hanging out. There's some other with Rachel Lambert, who is the CEO and founder of Brain Code Centers. And Brain Code Centers is the largest company across the country that does neurofeedback in brain trainings. It's fascinating stuff. So we're, you know, adding some of the science into this and application. And I've got three or four speakers that I'm working on that'll be pretty sweet.
That's incredible. All right, Renee, October 26th, AmpCon, Dallas. I will be there. Housing Wire Annual, October 10th through 12th, down at the Hyatt Lost Pines. You will be there. I'm excited to bring so much knowledge, expertise, speakers, community, energy, mindset to the housing community in October of this year. Thanks for partnering, Renee. It's always fun.
Absolutely, dude. Anytime, my friend. I'm looking forward to working more together.
Thank you so much for listening to the Housing News Podcast. Please take a few seconds to rate Housing News on Apple Podcasts. It means a lot for the show, and we really do appreciate and listen to your feedback. Also, we're gearing up for Housing Wire Annual in October. Please visit housingwire.com/events for full details about our big annual event in Austin, Texas.